Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. Lead poisoning in New York City. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. Blood pressure guidelines have changed. Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifies today before the House Judiciary Committee, and new light has been shed on the death of a Green Beret in Mali. New York City has a reputation for fighting lead exposure in its residents. However, Reuters exposes that the city is still struggling against this foe, linked to cognitive deficits and other health issues.
In the U.S. war on lead poisoning, New York City has maintained one of the best reputations for aggressive lead contamination prevention. It outlawed lead paint for homes in 1960, far ahead of the national ban. And in 2004, a housing law aimed to completely eliminate childhood lead poisoning by 2010. But as we near the end of 2017, lead is still lurking in some parts of the city. Take this 116-year-old building in Coney Island.
A banana.
Natalia Rollins moved here with her two young sons from a homeless shelter, part of a city-sponsored voucher program. But inspectors recently found lead in the kitchen,
the tub,
the bathroom, and next to the children's beds.
My son, I took him to the doctor. His lead was really high, and it's scary. It's scary for any mother to go through this, any parent.
Mommy.
Two-year-old Noah had lead exposure more than twice the CDC's elevated threshold, and Reuters reporter Josh Schneer says Noah's case is not that uncommon.
Our data has found, we've looked at the data citywide, that lead poisoning has been eradicated in a lot of the city, in a lot of the quarters of the city. But in other areas, there are still hot spots, areas where many, many children still test high for lead. The city is trying to prevent it, but the approach is incomplete. And so you have cases like little Noah testing high for lead. He has hand-to-mouth behaviors, and it's natural for toddlers and kids to put things in their mouth. But when you have lead paint particles, dust, lead chips, around the apartment in an old building like this, that is a danger.
Natalia and her two boys are now living in a Bronx safe house for lead poisoning victims, but it's not just underprivileged children in New York who get exposed. In Manhattan, a small area of the Upper West Side has had recent high test rates similar to those found across Flint, Michigan. In Greenpoint, Brooklyn, once a bustling industrial hub with businesses including the largest manufacturer of lead pencils in the U.S., researchers have been taking soil readings and found traces of lead in the backyard of Sarah Duford, who has two small children.
You know, it's definitely going to change the way I feel about letting the kids play out here, where my kids might dig if they're playing around. So, yeah, it's definitely concerning, very concerning.
Lead is linked to cognitive deficits and other serious health impacts. Over a two-year nationwide investigation, Reuters has now documented more than 3,800 census tracts or zip code areas across 34 states where childhood lead poisoning rates have been double those found in Flint.
And now it's time for your business and market report. MSNBC is tackling the issue of unmotivated employees, ones their bosses might be tempted to label as lazy. Here is business and life strategist Tony Robbins giving his tips on how to help others find their motivation.
I know people are inherently lazy, but what you can do with quote, what you call a lazy person, is go sit down with them and try to find out what their passion is. The other thing you do is get them to be physical. A lot of times what the laziness is the more we sit today, people don't move. But if you physically go do a sport or something with someone like that, you'll see another side of them. And when you see the other side and they see you recognizing that side, it'll create a different bond with you. But labeling them lazy is the worst thing you can do because now it's a character defect as opposed to you understanding what really makes this person work. I always tell people aren't lazy. They just have infinite goals. You know, your goals affect you whatever they are. Somebody says, I have no goals. Well, yes, you do. You have a goal to get through the day. You have a goal to make it through this next hour. You have a goal to get to your coffee. You know, if those are your goals, you're not gonna find much of your spirit and soul awakened. I think motive does matter. And you gotta find something that is a motive that is their motive. In other words, something that fulfills them, or you got to move them to a place where they can do something where they are fulfilled. You really got to be a practical psychologist. You really got to be able to understand, what do people fear? What do they desire? What do they need? What are they worried about? And then show them how to meet their needs through the company's goals as well, at least some of their needs. And then you're going to unleash the power of your organization.
Wall Street got off to a rocky start this morning, with the Dow tumbling over 100 points upon GE's second straight day of losses. Here is Reuters' Fred Katayama with his assessment of yesterday's stock market performance.
Wall Street bounced back from morning losses on Monday, overcoming a sharp drop in GE shares and investor concern over the U.S. tax reform. High dividend-paying sectors like consumer staples and utilities led the rally. Direction Managing Director Sylvia Jablonski.
You know, there's some big deals in the semiconductor space that investors are looking at. Megatech has continued to rally. Earnings per share estimates from all of those companies have outperformed. Investors are thinking about tax policy, what the final bill will look like. But ultimately, the S&P has been on a trend this year. So I think investors are you know, cautiously optimistic, but monitoring it very closely.
General Electric shares weighing on the Dow and other industrial shares. The sprawling conglomerate said it'll focus on three businesses, aviation, power, and healthcare, and it cut its dividend and profit outlook in half. Mattel shares sprung higher. A source says rival Hasbro has made an approach to acquire the toy maker behind the brands Barbie and Hot Wheels. Investors scooped up Qualcomm shares after the chip maker turned down Broadcom's $103 billion unsolicited takeover bid. Shares slumped in Europe, pulled down by poor earnings updates.
Now let's take a closer look at the stock market's performance today. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 17 points, and in early afternoon trading was down 51 points at 23,389. The Nasdaq yesterday closed up 7 points, and in early afternoon trading was down 18 points at 6,740. The S&P 500 yesterday closed up 3 points, and in early afternoon trading was down 6 points at 2,579. Crude oil was down $1.29 at $55.47 a barrel. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed down a point, and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed down 30. The London FTSE 100 closed down a point, and the DAX in Germany closed down 41. Today's quote of the day comes from St. Rose Philippine Duchesne. There are no difficulties, except for those who worry too much about tomorrow. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Lawrence O'Toole. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, it's Mike Church. When you hear the words Catholic magazine these days, you probably think Newsweek magazine with more tiaras and a few less heretics. That's why you need to subscribe to Regina magazine. 6 times each year, Regina draws together extraordinary Catholic writers, photographers, and videographers with a vibrant faith and wide-ranging interest. And they do it all for free at reginamag.com. To subscribe for free, just go to reginamag.com. You might even read some posts by yours truly there. Regina Magazine, inspiring, intelligent, Catholic, at reginamag.com.
The youngest of four sons, Lawrence O'Toole was born in 1128 in Castledermot, Ireland. His father, Muir Hertach, gave Lawrence up as a hostage at the age of 10 to King Dermot McMurrah. After 2 years of dehumanizing treatment, Lawrence's father convinced the king to put Lawrence in the hands of the abbot of Gendelaw, and he received permission to attend the monastic school. For the next 13 years, he studied there and amassed a reputation for piety and learning. When Abbot Dunlang died, the 26-year-old Lawrence was selected unanimously to be abbot. Abbot Lawrence was a reformer who brought spiritual renewal to the church in Ireland and brought the Gaelic monastic movement into line with the Frankish-European liturgic monastic movement. During this time, he became a member of the Augustinian order. After 6 years, he was unanimously elected Archbishop of Dublin, the first Irishman to be appointed to that see. Lawrence was known for his charity to the poor and survived an assassination attempt by a lunatic who sought to make him the next Thomas Becket while he was visiting Henry II at Canterbury. St. Lawrence died in 1180 after having effected the reconciliation between Ireland and England. St. Lawrence O'Toole, pray for us. The Associated Press reports that the American Heart Association has adjusted its guidelines regarding what constitutes high blood pressure. The new guidelines are resulting in an additional 14% of adults being classified as having high blood pressure.
About half of U.S. adults are now considered to have high blood pressure under new guidelines announced Monday by the American Heart Association and other medical groups.
Half of all adults. Yeah, that's the sad truth.
For decades, people were considered to have high blood pressure if they had a top reading of at least 140 or a bottom one of 90. Now, the threshold has been lowered to 130 over 80. The change means an additional 14% of adults are considered to have high blood pressure, about 30 million more people.
I want you to appreciate that this guideline emphasizes lifestyle measures.
Those measures include weight loss, regular exercise, a healthy diet, high in fruits and vegetables, and limiting alcohol.
We've got to try to do a better job in helping adults to be healthy and helping clinicians to advise them how to be healthy.
Dr. Paul Welton, a Tulane University physician who led the panel, says the new advice is more honest about telling people when they need help for hypertension, the medical term used for high blood pressure.
The upper end of what was previously pre-hypertension, we're saying that's really hypertension. You're at double the risk for a heart attack compared to somebody with a normal pressure, and you should know it.
Often called the silent killer, high blood pressure is second only to smoking as a preventable cause of early death. Doctors are hoping the new advice helps patients lower their risk for heart disease, stroke, and other problems caused by high blood pressure. Krista Fourier, Associated Press, Anaheim, California.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified today before the House Judiciary Committee facing questions about Russia's involvement in the 2016 election. UPI reports that last month Sessions had said that he had had no contact with Russian officials, nor did he know anybody who did. Then former Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos pled guilty to misleading investigators regarding his involvement with Russia. In his statements, Papadopoulos said that Sessions had been present at a campaign meeting in 2016 in which he, Papadopoulos, offered to set up a meeting between then-candidate Trump and President Vladimir Putin. In his opening statements, Attorney General Sessions said that at the time he gave his affirmation about not knowing anybody in contact with Russia, he had forgotten about this meeting with Papadopoulos, but that upon reading the account of the meeting, he did indeed recall that it had taken place. He affirmed that he had vehemently pushed back against what he saw as an inappropriate suggestion and said that if he had remembered that this meeting took place, he would not have lied about it. Courtesy of the Associated Press, here is an excerpt from those hearings today.
Lastly, I would like to address the false charges made about my previous testimony. My answers have not changed. I've always told the truth, and I have answered every question as I understood them to the best of my recollection, as I will continue to do today. I would like to address recent news reports regarding meetings during the campaign attended by George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, among others. Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter. But I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago. And I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it, because I pushed back against his suggestion that I thought may have been improper. As for Mr. Page, while I do not challenge his recollection, I have no memory of his presence at a dinner at the Capitol Hill Club or any passing conversation he may have had with me as he left the dinner. In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie. Let me be clear. I have at all times conducted myself honorably and in a manner consistent with the high standards and responsibilities of the Office of Attorney General, which I revere. I spent 15 years in that department. I love that department. I honor that department and will do my dead level best to be worthy of your Attorney General. As I said before, my story has never changed. I've always told the truth, and I've answered every question to the best of my recollection, and I will continue to do so today.
Recently, we reported on the investigation into the death of Green Beret Sergeant Logan Melgar, who was found dead in Mali, where he was on a special forces mission. Suspected in his death, which has been attributed to strangulation, are two of Sergeant Melgar's elite Navy SEAL Team 6 co-workers. Zero Hedge, via the Daily Beast, reports that military investigators now believe that Sergeant Melgar came across a money-skimming operation being perpetrated by the two SEALs, whereby money was being taken from a fund used to pay informants. The SEALs offered to give Sergeant Melgar a cut of their profits, but he declined. Sergeant Melgar would tell his wife in the days leading to his death that he had had a bad feeling about a couple of his co-workers, but that he would tell her more when he got home. Nobody has divulged what instigated the June 4th altercation, which resulted in Sergeant Melgar's losing consciousness and respiratory arrest. Melgar was brought to a nearby French clinic by the SEALs and another Green Beret, but he was dead on arrival. The SEALs had told their superiors that Melgar had been drinking and was intoxicated during their hand-to-hand combat exercises. This was an odd claim, considering that multiple people have said Sergeant Melgar did not drink, nor was he found to have had any alcohol or drugs in his system at the time of his death. In this Celestial Musings, I have noticed a new word popping up in the last few days: Friendsgiving. I admit, I am often a bit late to the party. This word has been around, from what I can tell, for a decade. Urban Dictionary says that Friendsgiving is the celebration of Thanksgiving dinner with your friends and occurs on the Wednesday before or the Friday after Thanksgiving. I also see it defined as the celebration of Thanksgiving with friends on Thanksgiving Day itself. As I flip through websites talking about Friendsgivings, I notice a common theme. Thanksgivings are for old traditions. Read, boring. And Friendsgivings are for making new traditions. Read, fascinating. Thanksgivings are referred to in a somewhat disparaging manner, as if they are a burden, but Friendsgivings are just hip and all around fantastic because, well, you don't have to put up with all your stodgy old relatives and their same old, lame old dishes year after year. Nothing like another push in society to strip family of its significance and a holiday of its holy roots. An article on Lifehacker says, quote, "Look, you're with friends now. You don't have to wear that sweater Aunt Marie gave you, say grace at the dinner table before tasting the stuffing, or talk about the same memories over and over again if you don't want to. Let your hair down, have a stiff drink, and get everybody in a good, fun mood." Now, I'm all for a good time with friends, and I can probably count on one hand the number of Thanksgivings we have spent with family in our 20 years of marriage, although not by choice. Most of ours have been alone with the children or with friends. And we love our friends, dearly. We call each other family, and we're there for each other as such. But there isn't a Thanksgiving that I have spent with friends where I didn't wish to be with family. All the hip new traditions and snazzy dishes in the world don't hold a candle to Dad's smoked turkey, Mom's spinach madeleine, and the rollicking conversations and laughter of those who loved me from my earliest days. Friendsgiving. I really have a beef with this name, Friendsgiving. It takes the thanks out. We aren't giving friends on Thanksgiving or on Friendsgiving. We are giving thanks. And as a culture, I think that we are gradually forgetting to whom this thanks of ours is due. How better is this illustrated than by that comment that you don't need to say your blessing at Friendsgiving like you would at Thanksgiving? Because we all know that giving thanks to God and asking for His blessings are simply outdated practices for losers. But they aren't. Thanksgiving is not about traditions, although traditions can be good and grounding for us. Thanksgiving is about remembering from whom all of our blessings flow and giving Him thanks for those blessings. Let me ask you, if you celebrated Christmas with friends, would you call it Friendsmas? How about Freester? You'd better not. Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for king-size truth from radio-sized speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your news, talk, and saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.